Welcome to People Power and Politics, hard talk, riveting interviews, community updates, in-depth analysis. That's People Power and Politics. We tell it to you as it is. No holds barred. You are the people. You have the power. We bring you the politics. To listen to our show, be a guest, or to advertise, visit www.pppradio.nyc. That's www.pppradio.nyc.
A very warm welcome to everyone. We are joined by a very extra special guest, Mr. Tom Suozzi, who is running for governor of New York. Welcome, sir. Good to have you back here with us.
Pearl, it's so good to be back with you. And I say hello to all my friends out there listening to your radio show.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Mr. Suozzi.
Well, I think all of my background is out there. I'm trained as a CPA and attorney. I was the mayor of my hometown for 8 years. I was the county executive of Nassau County for 8 years. I'm still a member of Congress. Great honor, great responsibility, but I'm giving it up to run for governor of New York State. And I always say I'm a proven executive. I have a heart for the people, care for the people. That's why I'm in public service, but I've got the skills to actually get the job done. Number two, I'm a common sense Democrat. I'm not going to pander to the left. I'm not going to back down to the right. I'm sick and tired of all these extremists who just fight with each other. I want to get things done on behalf of the people. And my platform is very clear. I'm focused on reducing crime. Number one issue, reduce crime. Number two, make it more affordable for people to live here in New York. We have the highest taxes in America. People can't pay their rent. They can't pay their utility bills. We got to make it more affordable here. People are leaving because they can't afford it. Number three, we have to lift up our children and our troubled schools that have been left behind for generations. And number four, we have to go after what is the most corrupt state in the United States of America. That's not me saying that. That's the Washington Post. We've seen all these people lose their jobs to scandal, to indictment. So I want to clean that up. So bottom line, heart for the people, proven skills to get the job done.
Now, Mr. Suozzi, you've had a Caribbean experience which have influenced who you are today, right?
Oh, I love the Caribbean. It's a big part of my life. When I was a young man, I went down and I lived in Trinidad and Tobago for 3 months. And I was down there. I was auditing the Texaco refinery. I lived out in the country at Pointe Pierre. I used to go to church. I forget if it was San Fernando or Marabella, but it was a great time in my life back in 19, I don't know if it was 85 or 86. And I had a lot of Callaloo soup and ate dasheen and roti. And, you know, that's when they were singing Tiny Whiny, Whine Your Boom Boom. And I would drink Red Stripe or Carib. No, Carib is what we drank there. I drank Red Stripe when we went over to Jamaica. I had a friend that taught over in Jamaica at Immaculate Conception High School on Constant Spring Road. And I used to go out to Port Antonio and hang out at this bar that Jimmy Cliff used to hang out at. And it was just a really great time of my life. I went to Barbados. You know, I have a good Bajan friend now. He's a third-generation American. He's a third-generation dentist, but his family's from Barbados. Most people don't know that the people from Barbados are called Bajans.
Yeah.
And traveled around a bunch of the islands. And Tobago, when I was there, was no hotels. You know, it's just natural, beautiful place. And the reef, the coral reef, was just this incredibly beautiful place. And we'd go out there and we'd go snorkeling and I went fishing. We caught some grouper and the guy made us grouper fish on the seashore. I got to tell you these stories because it reminds me of so much. I remember I was down there. I was a young kid. You know, I was a young man. I was in my 20s. And there was a bamboo fire. And they said, hey, we've got to go fight the bamboo fire. Like in America, you don't go fight the bamboo fire. The fire department does that.
Yeah.
So we're going to fight the bamboo fire? I said, yeah. So they stuck a pump in the lake, and we're fighting the bamboo fire. And all of a sudden, the bamboo is exploding because the water is boiling inside. It says pop, pop, pop. I was like, wow, I can't. This is unbelievable. And we used to go catching. You ever hear of caiman? You know caimans? You know, the like alligators?
Mm-hmm.
We went out in a boat to go catch the caimans. You got to reach in with your hand and grab the caiman by its neck and pull it out of the water. And I went to go do it, and I pulled back. It turned out it was this big, giant caiman, but it had a small head. So it was much bigger than we thought it was. We went out with the game wardens. So I just had a great – it was a great experience in my life.
So given that great experience and, you know, your interaction with Caribbean Americans here in New York City, the black and brown communities, what can we expect from you as the governor of New York? How are you going to work for us?
You know – I obviously love all people. I mean, I wouldn't be in public life if I didn't love people. And I'm a first-generation American myself. My father was born in Italy. Three of my grandparents were immigrants. And you know, every politician says, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. I have a record throughout my entire time, even going back to when I was the young mayor of Glen Cove. I was 31 years old. I set up the first day worker shape-up center anywhere on the East Coast of the United States of America, despite a lot of controversy, to try and help undocumented people. And, you know, I kicked ICE out of Nassau County when I was Nassau County Executive. I was the person of the year for the New York Immigration Coalition. So I'll look out for all people. I mean, but I have a warm spot, certainly for Caribbeans, but also for all immigrants. Because, you know, people don't realize it, but my father, who was born in Italy, the Italians were very discriminated against in America in the 1930s and 40s and 50s. My father actually fought in World War II with the Americans, but he was stationed in Italy. He had to go back to his home country. He was a navigator on a B-24. Came back and went to law school. He couldn't get a job at a law firm because nobody would hire the Italians because the Italians had teamed up with the Germans during World War II. So they said, oh, you're either with Mussolini or you're with the mafia. So he couldn't get a job. So my father was always very, very emphatic about you can't discriminate against anybody because he suffered from that discrimination. And people don't realize it now that Italians actually went through this very difficult time. But if somebody ever said anything discriminatory in front of my father about any group of people, he would confront them and he'd walk out of the room. So we were taught that everybody has a divine spark in them as a creation of God. And we have to treat people like that. And that's what motivates a lot of my public service. Let me just say that, you know, we talked about Trinidad. After I was in Trinidad for 3 months, I came back to New York. I lived in Manhattan. And I was assigned, I actually volunteered, to work in Bedford-Stuyvesant at the Restoration Housing Project. It was a pro bono audit of the Restoration Housing Project. I used to take the subway down to Nostrand Avenue. Now, I've been back to Bedford-Stuyvesant now. It's a very different place than it was in 1986.
Very different.
And it was a scary place. And I still can't believe the violence that goes on in those communities. I went to a candlelight vigil for a young man that was killed playing basketball. I mean, I'm so devastated by the families that have been ripped apart by the crime that takes place, especially in black and brown communities. And my number one issue is to reduce the crime. And to do that, I have a 15-point plan to fix bail reform all the way to dealing with education, because 75% of the people in jail have a drug or alcohol problem or a mental health problem. 50% of the people in jail have a learning disability. When we fail children at a young age, then we fail them for the rest of their lives. We have got to do a much better job. Every politician says it's better to educate a child instead of paying for a jail cell. How come it doesn't happen? Because people don't know how to run government typically. We got all these programs. We spend more money than anybody else. We need people who have a heart for the people and the skills to run government, to make it work for people. That's what I'm all about, taking all of our health and human service programs and bringing them into our schools.
So, Mr. Swazi, I know that you mentioned that you got Man of the Year from the New York Immigration Coalition, which is a very reputable organization that have been fighting for immigrants, as opposed to your opponent who has said that she would work with ICE to get immigrants deported.
Yeah, when she was the Erie County Clerk, Elliot Spitzer at the time said, I want to give driver's licenses to the undocumented, which is a good policy. It helps with insurance. It helps with a lot of different things. Stop pushing people underground. She said at the time, if anybody comes to the Erie County Clerk's office and they're undocumented, I will report them to ICE. I'll actually set up an ICE station here. Now that's just, I mean, come on. What does that tell you about somebody? When she was a member of Congress, this is an unrelated topic, but it's the same idea. When she was a member of Congress, she was endorsed by the NRA. How is that possible? And when she was asked about that, when she was debating Jumaane Williams when she ran for lieutenant governor, she said, well, I needed it to do it for votes. Come on. Come on. What do you stand for? So report the undocumented to ICE, endorsed by the NRA. When she was in Congress, she had a 50% rating, a failing grade from the League of Conservation Voters her first year in office. So she was way on the right in those days. Now she's way on the left. Her lieutenant governor that she first picked, who got indicted, by the way, was campaigning on a defund the police platform. That's a losing proposition. She's got a socialist as her head of intergovernmental affairs. She endorsed a socialist for city council in Queens. So what are you on the right or you're on the left? What do you stand for? What do you believe in? So with me, agree with me, don't agree with me, I'm consistent. I've always been fighting for the people, and I'm a common sense Democrat. I've got all the Democratic rankings. I'm the chair of the Labor Caucus in Congress. I have an F rating from the NRA. I got a man of the year, person of the year, you can't say man of the year, person of the year from the New York Immigration Coalition. Mm-hmm. I was the environmentalist of the year for the whole League of Conservation Voters for the whole state of New York. I have 100% rating from the Human Rights Campaign, 100% rating from Planned Parenthood. Whatever the issue is, I've got all the Democratic credentials, but I'm a common sense Democrat. I'm sick of the far left. I'm sick of the far right. I want people just to work together to try and help the people. Don't get into public service unless you want to help people. And you don't help people by just battling with each other all the time. You have to try and negotiate to get things done.
Okay. Now, talking about negotiations, you mentioned that you were the chair of labor. Talk about your support, your understanding of the union issues, you know, and understanding that the union members are part of the middle class here in New York City, and how you're going to work with them, work for them as governor of New York.
I don't care if you are a far left or far right, a progressive or a conservative. Everybody in America should believe that if you're willing to work hard, in return for working hard, you'll make enough money so you can afford to have a place to live, so you can educate your children, so you can have health insurance, and so you can retire one day without being scared. That's the union message. That's the labor message. That's what built the middle class in America. In the 1980s, we went through this whole thing. We were fighting with Japan and Germany about the car industry. And it was a big change in America. And it became very anti-union. It was a big focus. The businesses said, we're going to focus on the shareholders. That's all that matters. Forget about the workers. Forget about the community. Forget about the consumer. Well, all we care about, our only job is to look out for the shareholders. Well, we created a lot of wealth since the end of the 1980s. The Dow Jones has gone up 2,000% since the end of the 1980s. The gross domestic product has gone up 1,000% since the end of the 1980s. But workers' wages have gone up by less than 20%. The reason I formed the Labor Caucus is because when Donald Trump first got elected, we had a big meeting in Washington, D.C., 50 people in the room. And I remember a guy, a union guy, he said, you know, the Democrats, they used to show up at the church picnics and they used to come to the bars and they would talk to us about what we cared about. And that like hit me over the head. We're not talking about what people care about these days. A lot of politicians are. We need to talk. What do people care about these days? They care about public safety and crime. That's their number one concern. They care about affordability, that they can't afford to pay these taxes. They can't afford to pay the rent. They can't pay their utilities. When I say I'm campaigning on crime and taxes, people say, oh, Tom, that's a Republican message. I say, no, it's not. That's what the people are talking about. The people are concerned about crime and taxes. The people are concerned about affordability. The people are concerned about their kids in the schools. The people are sick and tired of the corruption of the politicians just taking care of the inside players instead of taking care of the people. So, you know, the union message, whether you're a carpenter or an electrician, my grandfather on the Irish side, my grandfather was an electrician with the IBEW. He put the lights on top of the Empire State Building. I've got a union family, and I've got great support from the IBEW, but all the unions, the carpenters, the electricians, the plumbers, the welders, the iron workers, the SEIU workers, you know, these home health care workers, these health care workers that went through so much during the pandemic. We got to lift these folks up. We got to pay them more money. We're losing them. We don't have enough people, because we could create a whole new middle class of women, especially of color, who are working in these jobs, especially home health care. I grew up in a house. All four of my grandparents lived in my house growing up. Three of them were very sick. My mom was a nurse. She did a lot of the caregiving, but I did as well as all of our family did. And my parents said, we're not going to put that burden on our kids. We're going to get long-term care insurance. So my mom and dad died at 95 and 93 years old, but they died at home, and they had home health care workers taking care of them. But people can't afford to buy home health care insurance anymore. It's too expensive. I got a bill in Congress to try and fix that. But I have a real passion for helping our seniors. We can't afford to put everybody in a nursing home. We'll go broke. Medicaid will go broke. We have 10,000 new senior citizens every day. We must support the home health care workers that need a decent wage and benefits so that they can afford to live a decent life, a middle class life. Everybody will win if we do that. And that goes with all health care workers.
Okay. So We know that you and Mayor Eric Adams go way back. Let's talk about that relationship.
Well, I'm very fond of the mayor. He's a wonderful guy. I endorsed him very early on in his race for mayor. I worked hard for him. I raised money for him. I campaigned with him. I campaigned in a lot of neighborhoods where people didn't know him, but they knew me. And when he won, a couple months later, he said, I want you to be my deputy mayor. I said, I'm not going to be your deputy mayor. I'm running for governor. I can do a lot more to help you as governor and the people of New York City as mayor. But, you know, that was a great honor that he asked me because he recognized that I know how to run things. He knows I know how government works. I know how to get things done. Too many people in government, they give a good speech. They can pass legislation. But that's not enough. You've got to be able to run things. You have to be able to implement the laws to actually help get things done for the people. And I'm good at, I've been doing this a long time, almost 30 years. I know how to run government. I know how to get things done, and I know how to serve people.
Okay, and let's talk about your running mate, Diana Reyna.
She's fantastic. Diana Reyna was a city councilwoman in Brooklyn from Williamsburg for 12 years. She was the deputy borough president under Eric Adams for 4 years. And when she was elected to city council, she was the first Dominican woman elected in the history of New York State. And when she becomes the lieutenant governor, she will be the first Latina elected statewide in the history of New York State, Latino or Latino, elected statewide in the history of New York State. So she's great. You know, I was looking for a woman of color to be my running mate, and I talked to a few people, and I went to dinner with Diana and her husband and my wife Helena and I, and I was like, wow, this is clear as day. She's the perfect partner because we share the same values. I'm a first-generation American. She's a first-generation American. We care about our families. We care about the people. We care about service. And her husband is a lieutenant in the New York City Police Department. She knows what it's like to worry about your spouse going off to work. She understands the importance of public safety, of supporting those great officers that do a good job looking out for the people. We got to clean up the people that break the rules and go after them. I got a record of doing that myself. When I was the Nassau County executive, I hired an African-American police commissioner. This was 2002. You can imagine what this was like out in Nassau County. I hired an African-American police commissioner that came out of the New York City Police Department. And he helped me turn that department around. And I left with the lowest crime rate in the United States of America. But he promoted a lot of black and brown people. And Keechon Sewall, who's now the commissioner of police in New York City, she came from Nassau County. And she got promoted through the ranks in Nassau County under our administration, where she went on to become the head of detectives for all the Nassau County Police Department. Like I said, every politician says, oh, I'm going to do this. I've been doing this. I not only had a black police commissioner, I had the black deputy county executive for economic development. I had a Latina commissioner of health, a Latina commissioner of mental health, a Latino parks commissioner of parks and recreation. So I put black and brown people in non-traditional jobs, especially for Nassau County, that really changed the culture. It's not enough to make a speech about minority and women-owned businesses, and you want to promote them. It's not enough to pass legislation. You've got to put people in place who have powerful positions who will actually implement those things. We should increase the minority and women business-owned contracts in New York State to 35%. We should the people who work in higher-level positions should look like the people of New York State. The contracts we give out should go to people who look like the people of New York State. And we should provide capital to minority and women-owned businesses so they can afford to bid on government contracts and help to register for government contracts. The guy named James Sanders in Southeast Queens is a senator. Mm-hmm. He has an idea for a public bank. I support the idea of a public bank. We have a $220 billion budget in New York State. You know how much deposits we have? Why put that money all in traditional banks? Let's put it in a public bank supported by a minority-owned bank or a credit union. And they could run it for us. I don't want the government running. The government doesn't do a good job running things. But they could run it for us. But give them a mission of providing capital for black and brown home ownership. Give them capital to help minority and women-owned businesses so that they can bid on these contracts and get these contracts. The answer to generational wealth is business and home ownership. Let me go off topic if I can for 1 second. You know about the New York public housing, NYCHA housing? It's terrible. I've been touring these places. People have been living there for generations, literally generations. I saw apartments burnt out for 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, burnt out, not fixed up. I saw a story on the news about a woman who died during COVID in one of the public housing facilities in Queens. They didn't find her body until 2 years later when workers were working outside. The skeleton, what they found. I mean, it's crazy. You've got 500,000 people living in public housing. There are 25,000 families that make over $100,000 a year. What the heck are we doing? Public housing was supposed to be a transition to home ownership. We should be encouraging home ownership for these folks and helping them so they can live in affordable housing. Because if you buy an affordable house and you live there for 20 or 30 or 40 years, when you pass away, you're passing on a house that's worth a lot more money to your kids. That's how you create generational wealth. That's what Levittown was out in Nassau County where I'm from, except it was all the black and brown people frozen out. They redlined them out. So for the white people. That's why you have such a discrepancy between black and brown people and white people in generational wealth. It's because of home ownership. So I'm very, very committed to encouraging home ownership, especially among black and brown families.
So, Mr. Swazi, June the 28th, that's the big day. New York is looking to elect a governor. Tell us why you should be the next governor of New York.
Well, June 28th is the Democratic primary, but early voting has already started. So people can early vote as well. And listen, if you're a Democrat and you want to win in November, I'm your candidate. Because any other candidate who wins could possibly lose the general election, as hard as it is to imagine. But if you look at the job approval ratings of Governor Hochul, they're way down low. She's not doing a 69% of New Yorkers say that she's failing on crime. And they say 91% of New Yorkers say that crime is a serious or very serious issue. They don't like that Buffalo Bills deal. They don't like that her handpicked lieutenant governor got indicted for bribery and corruption. So I've got the proven executive skills to get the job done. I'm a common sense Democrat, not going to pander to the left, not going to back down to the right. I'm going to work for the people. And I'm focused on crime, taxes, helping our kids in our troubled schools, and going after the corruption. So if you want to win in November and you like what I'm saying, I need you to tell your friends and tell your neighbors and make sure you get out and vote. Now, if you hear me, you say, listen, I don't like that guy, Tom Suozzi. I never liked that guy, Tom Suozzi. He's no good. Then just keep it to yourself. Don't tell anybody else, okay?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Suozzi. It was a pleasure having you, and we wish you the very, very best. And we look forward to having you back, hopefully, as the governor of New York.
Thank you, Ms. Pearl. I'd love to be back on. We'll go out and we'll have some Callaloo soup together. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
People power in politics. Hard talk. Riveting interviews, community updates, in-depth analysis. That's people power in politics. We tell it to you as it is. No holds barred. You are the people. You have the power. We bring you the politics. To listen to our show, be a guest, or to advertise, visit www.pppradio.nyc. That's www.pppradio.nyc.